the ANews podcast. This is episode 128. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week on anarchist news. It's designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism by email at podcast@anarchistnews.org. For more information and usually some good commentary, go to the nonsectarian anarchistnews.org. What's new this week? Running Down the Walls, Philadelphia. From Philly anarchist Black Cross, quote, Philadelphia Anarchist Black Cross presents our second annual Running Down the Walls, RDTW. Join us for another revolutionary 5-kilometer run, walk, bike, skate, and day of solidarity. If you would like to participate in light yoga and warm-up stretches before, please arrive by 10 a.m. and bring a mat if you can, unquote. Proceeds go towards supporting the remaining Move 9 prisoners, including supporting them when they get out.
Call for anarchic action from Feminas, Brujas, and Insurrectionists, FBI, from Anon, via anarchistsworldwide.noblogs.org. I would call this an anarcho-feminist polemic, as it speaks about being women, and being anarchist, and being fed up with violence against women. But the authors seem to accept the definition of feminist as liberal and or reformist, which is understandable, but kinda too bad. What makes anarchist a label worth struggling for and defining for ourselves, and feminist not such a label? Quote, we are not people. To be people is to delegate our reality as women, our freedom and our autonomy to another, is to deny our individuality and our essence. We are anarchic warriors in struggle against the patriarchy. We are conscious of the fact that we are at war, and we know who our enemies are. We know what we are facing, and we also know who our allies of the system and who our accomplices are. We recognize what others keep silent, the presence in the National Palace of a misogynistic and sexist, pro-life, ultra-conservative, and evangelical fascist that the left has allied itself to in their constant opportunism to seize power at all costs, unquote. I appreciate the attempt behind not being people being women. I guess women is another one of those labels we decide to fight for or let go.
The Local Kids, Issue 4, from thelocalkids.noblogs.org. Titles include, Where is the Impatience? Dynamics Inherent to Protest Movements, a long piece from 2018 translated from the French. Metamorphoses, As I Watch the World Through the Porthole, I Get a Little Bored, from 2016 translated from the Italian. Metamorphoses, Step by Step, also from Italian, 2016. And from 2015, Italian, Stopping to Reflect, a bit too much like a Nike's advertisement urging us to just do it, perhaps, but thoughtful nonetheless. Quote, at the time of the transformation of the industrial economy into the post-industrial economy, we are witnessing yet another mobilization of powers for yet another adjustment of the world. The underlying logic is the one of uninterrupted production, extending henceforth from the battlefield of World War I, which gave a decisive development to the universe of the factory, colonizing the whole of society, unquote, etc.
Love, Anarchy, and Emma Goldman from opendemocracy.net, subtitled here, Thinking for the World, whatever that means. The only post on this thread is about how Candace Falk has a bad rep, which many people already know. Apparently that's the only thing worth noting about this piece on Emma Goldman, by someone who ran the Emma Goldman papers for years, and might suck, not arguing that, but also might know some stuff. Wait, are we requiring goodness, trademark, from all our sources of information now? I missed that memo. Anyway, this is mostly about the relevance of Emma's love letters, some of which are featured in Falk's book, which is now getting reprinted. Quote, love letters form the most revealing part of the correspondence. In her belief, personal life and the great social issues of the day are always intertwined, unquote. Moving on.
Update on anarchist prisoner Vincenzo Vecchi. From anarchistsworldwide.noblogs.com. A brief update, including one more way that the court systems fuck with prisoners, and some notes about how to get a letter in to a prisoner in France. Also, a statement by Vecchi, read by him during his trial. Quote, rereading facts that happened under a certain point of view with a certain type of language, those of the bureaucracy of the courts, for instance, doesn't mean only considering them partially, but it means distorting their scope, their historical, social, and political collocation. It means completely distorting them from the whole context in which they occurred, unquote. So true, in so many different contexts. Quote, from my point of view, prosecuting the police in parallel with the demonstrators means investing the so-called law enforcement forces with too important a role in the affair. It means taking away importance from the gestures made by the people who took to the streets to express what they think of this society, relegating everyone in their historical role as victims of an omnipotent power. Carlo Giuliani, like so many other of my comrades, lost his life for having expressed all this with the courage and dignity that has always distinguished those who aren't subjected to this state of affairs. And as long as relations between people are regulated by external bodies representing a narrow social minority, he will not be the last. And since I am disillusioned and I attribute the right meaning to the word democracy, the idea that a representative of the established order is tried for having done their duty sincerely makes me smile. The state prosecutes the state, would say someone rightly. Unquote. Lots of goodness here.
Mexico. No one said it was peaceful. From Ediciones Inéditos. A responsible translation, i.e. includes translators' notes and caveats on untranslatables. Another piece on violence against women in Mexico, also outraged, and also feeling like a window back into the 80s and 90s in San Francisco, when Take Back the Night was supposed to be a message along these lines. Quote, later the walls were painted, performances with fire, movement, ever louder shouts, the first glass is shattered, shouts of empathy overflow, improvised tools and more glass falls. We shout with fury, with joy, with sadness. Yes, it was us, and yes, we do it again 1,000 times over. Yes, we ran off the men of our contingents from our space of action. They had nothing to do there. They were not invited. They were not welcome as friends or allies. Unquote. Best of luck, and may we all graduate from glass to some as yet undetermined better and more satisfying targets.
Green Scare Anarchist Book Fair Spring 2020. From Anon. No dates, just a, we're doing this again. So anyone who wants to prefigure anarchy by either being one of the insiders or getting backstabbed if you're not, keep an eye out for the actual information that is sure to be coming out soon. Quote, abandoning the politics of internalized victimhood is for us a more honest and practical way of interacting with the world around us. We cannot rely on the morality, guilt, and pity of others to survive. Conflict is an unavoidable element of social interaction. Unquote. In other words, assume hatred and hostility until otherwise notified.
Marseille, 2 days of Anarchist Book Fair from Act for Freedom. Quote, still here, as the technological offensive is in the process of renewing and deepening domination, we strive to weave complicities, passionately pursuing the destruction of oppression and exploitation in the attempt to break through this tedious present. Still here. Even though technological dependencies distract and numb us from the increasing loss of sensibilities and imagination, even though virtual relationships try to despoil us of our humanity and capacities to understand our surroundings, still here. To claim with love and pride anarchist ideas in an epoch when integration and repression march hand in hand, increasingly eclipsing the horizons of revolt. 2 days to meet to discuss and deepen anarchist ideas and proposals, to share our books and agitation material, testaments to our revolutionary heritage, to find new paper sparks ready to set fire to this present torn between rooted resignation and occasional outbursts of rage. 2 days and an anarchist book fair, free from commercial or institutional compromises. Unquote. Can you tell that I like some announcements better than others? September 21st and 22nd. Go if you can.
The NYC Anarchist Book Fair returns to Judson Memorial on its 13th edition. From the last of this week's rash of book fair announcements, some of which are clearly rashier and rasher than others. Quote, in its 13th edition, the book fair pays tribute to the anarchist and activist Willem Vance Bronson, who was killed as he tried to disrupt ICE camps activities, and the countercultural anarchist artist Ben Morea. An exhibition of Morea's drawings, featured in this year's book fair poster, will be exhibited during the book fair and art festival. During the book fair, Morea hosts a workshop dialogue session around revolutionary animism. Workshops also include Sylvia Federici talking about the struggle for the commons and debates on queer trans feminisms, Antifa, immigration, and ecology anarchism, among others. The book fair this year will offer a care space where healing practitioners and artists will offer group and individual care experiences, unquote. Worth it for Ben Morea, at least.
The Soldier Has Fallen from Zabalaza.net. A biographical obituary for an anarcho-communist who died of sugar diabetes, one of the many enemies of the poor. Quote, results of these years of militancy were limited, and times were always tough. MK was unemployed and poor and sought ways to make a living while struggling with illness. In recent years, contact became more sporadic. His passing on is a lesson that we are strong through each other, that we must take care of each other and hear each other, unquote.
Arson attack against prison profiteers, SPIE, in solidarity with anarchist prisoners, from anarchists worldwide, out of Berlin. A communique remembering G20 and the repressed aftermath, noting that fighting is still happening despite the state's efforts. Quote, it seems that the lethargy that followed the summit has disappeared, and countless communiques of solo actions and attacks have appeared. We join them, because only our collective rage, our longing for another world, and the determination that comes with it can accompany our journey. We send our fiery greetings to the Park Bench 3, to Loic, and all the other prisoners. Everything continues. Out of rage, solidarity, and complicity, we placed a Hamburg-style incendiary device under the front right tire of an SPIE car during the night of Wednesday to Thursday. Unquote.
Prison construction site sabotage by autonomous commando Thomas Meyer Falk from Anarchists Worldwide, who is sponsoring this week's A-News, apparently. This is a communique out of Germany about an attack on prison construction in the name of Thomas Meyer Falk, who has been in prison for over 20 years, including after his sentence was over. They keep him in security detention, which is bureaucratic for continuing his sentence after he was supposed to get out. The communique is worth reading, and so is the link they give to a statement by Meyer Falk. Quote, so what is this solitary confinement? Those held in isolation must spend time alone and cannot meet with other prisoners. Even the guards can only be seen when they bring you to the prison yard or to the shower cell, or hand you meals through the small hatch in the cell door. Depending on the local conditions, there is neither a radio nor a TV for either distraction or some sort of information. Visits from friends and relatives are severely restricted. You can see them behind bulletproof glass, just like in US movies, and guards are always present and listen to every word being said. Incoming and outgoing letters are read and sometimes copied by the prison administration in order to be filed. The address of the recipient and sender are noted in lists. Before and after visits, prisoners get completely searched, including being stripped naked, even though the prisoner cannot have, and is not allowed, any physical contact with visitors. This also happens before and after being let out into the tiny yard, which is topped with barbed wire. Those imprisoned in such isolation are no longer human beings, but potential sources of danger, more like a piece of meat that gets transported here and there under complete surveillance and control. Unquote. Write an anarchist prisoner today.
Wobbly sues Seattle police and city from It's Going Down. Quote, Brendan Maslukas Dunn was arrested at Seattle's Cal Anderson Park in October 5, 2006, along with two other friends, because they carried an anarcho-syndicalist flag. A handful of Wobblies, Students for a Democratic Society, and other radicals were hanging out in the park before the rally started when SPD officer Matt Hira grabbed the flag. Quote, Officer Hira came out of nowhere, stole our flag, and demanded we voluntarily turn ourselves into the police for questioning. We were clearly targeted because we were Wobblies and anarchists, Dunn stated. Unquote. No comment.
Audio and video. Final straw on nurturance culture with Nora Samarin. An hour. Episode starts off with Sean Swain reading an excerpt from Willem van Spronsen's manifesto. Willem. Burst then interviews author and academic Dr. Nora Samarin about her book, Turn This World Inside Out, The Emergence of Nurturance Culture and Its Related Concepts. Quote, nurturance culture, unquote, is never actually defined, but from context seems to involve finding ways of sorting out conflict without merely relying on shame and banishment, although those options appear to still be on the table. Heavy Cindy Milstein vibes from this interview as the concepts discussed, i.e., how do we, as anarchists, deal with conflict slash fucked upness in ways different from the dominant culture, make sure to leave space for, quote, soft people, unquote. I'm definitely not a hard person, but this kind of language seems to usually focus on people avoiding discomfort rather than potentially confronting the source of said discomfort. Shrug.
The Commonard audio zine, MP3, is 33 minutes. From Resonance Audio. The Olympia Communards remembered, quote, this compilation of writing comes from the second year of the blockade and was intended to be a record of sorts of a special time and place affectionately referred to by its participants as the Olympia Commune. In the Olympia Communards' own words, it is simply the perspective of some future possible world glancing back at the collapse of this world and searching for those elements of redemption hidden therein, unquote. This comes in multiple formats, MP3, PDF, YouTube, all the ways. We're really in the 2020s now.
From Embers, Art and Anarchy, a conversation with Lee Reed, an hour. Pretty solid interview with Hamilton, Ontario anarchist artist Lee Reed. The episodes of this podcast that involve, relatively, older anarchists who have been in one spot for a while really stand out to me. Having someone provide context and nuance for something like the gentrification of Hamilton's downtown seems pretty superior to just yelling, "It's bad!" Shocking, I know. Having said that, Lee's anarchism isn't my own, and I definitely don't care about what awards he has won for his music, but if music is your thing, there's lots of it in this episode.
The House of Surrender by Lori Penny, read by Ben Church, an hour and 2 minutes from We Will Remember Freedom with Margaret Kiljoy. Lori Penny is a young British feminist activist and essayist, as well as a smart science fiction writer. This science fiction reader recommends her fiction for sure, and I'm looking into her nonfiction now. This piece is a good example of some of the strengths of science fiction, far better than most political fiction I've read, as it pokes and queries more than leading one by the hand. I wouldn't call it the best of her writing. For example, the ending is kind of telegraphed, but the questions it poses are particularly interesting for anarchists. What is forgiveness? What is punishment? Who gets to forgive and or punish? And what surrender means, especially in relationship to sanctuary, and so on. The discussion with Penny and Kiljoy starts at 29 minutes and kept me entertained and interested. I certainly disagree with her about some things, but she's endearing and smart and enjoys some of the same complications that I like, so clearly she has good taste. P.S. I like the warden too. Kiljoy does push her a bit around the question of anarchist thought, and they get into the topic of ethical leadership and talking about how anarchist thought helps her in collaborating in her job and leftism being required for feminism and vice versa. So, per usual, if you want to enjoy her fiction, maybe read it before listening to her talk.
Anarchy Bang, Buddhism, 2 hours. Quote, Buddhist anarchism is something that has existed since the golden age of classical anarchism, but has never solidified into anything resembling a movement, organization, or even a unified philosophy. Given the countless different definitions of and sects within both anarchism and Buddhism, to use a label like Buddhist anarchism can mean anything and everything. And for a few random weirdos out there throughout time and around the world, Buddhist anarchism has meant a great deal. So this week we will discuss Buddhist anarchism, some ways to look at freedom and liberation as both an inner thing as well as a worldly thing, in both our personal lives as well as for all living beings, and maybe for our past and future lives as well. Join Ooh. In the conversation, unquote.
Epstein, Airbnb, ICE, and anti-fascism, and anarchist newsreel. 27 minutes from Transmetropolitan Review, and demonstrating the review's typical smushing of things together in a way that they never exactly explain. In this case, they cover that tendency by calling it a newsreel, implying that they're just reporting events without making intentional content associations. Anyway, spliced in with footage from the Hollywood movie Eyes Wide Shut are clips about Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, a woman who apparently provided at least some of the young women slash girls to the wealthy men who wanted to fuck them. The video moves without transition from that to the release of the cop who killed Alexis in Exarchia and riots in response to that release. This transitions into talking about Airbnb moving into Exarchia and the protests against Airbnb's gentrification and removal of housing from desirable places around the world, and the police violence that accompanies that. Moving to Airbnb's relationship to anti-anarchist violence in Italy, the Panico Squat, leading to Operation Panic, then to Willem Vance Bronson's action and reactions to it, then footage about the El Paso shooter, and then some fire in the Fruitvale, a primarily Latino neighborhood in Oakland. And while we're talking about this in the video part of this podcast, the write-up is extensive and worth reading critically in itself. It includes hyperlinks to back up random pieces of the text and is structured, if you want to call it that, under descriptors for Sauron's One Ring, apparently playing off the phrase sex ring. I would call that bad wordplay as it doesn't actually make any relevant connections, but maybe that's just me.
Topic of the week, anarcho-primitivism. Not long ago, primitivism was a significant strand of American anarchism. during the period of the WTO protests, through the green scare repression of environmentalists, John Suzan's ideas about the dangers of technology were undeniably important to many on the left. Towards an anthropology as science fiction, from Dominique, Blackseed 7. As someone who lived in the Pacific Northwest in the time Dominique references, this feels obvious, but I also traveled just enough to know that other areas of North America had different experiences and receptions to anarcho-primitivism. I've not used the term AP to describe myself in a lot of years, preferring green, anti-civ, or no fucking adjectives at all, but I've recently had several conversations where I realized the huge impact that tendency has had on both myself and the North American scene at large. Whether pro, anti, or ambivalent, how has anarcho-primitivism influenced your anarchy and that of the anarchist scene where you live? We didn't actually go over what you'd like to be called. Who am I talking to?
Andy.
Hello, Andy.
Hello. The impression I get is anarcho-primitivism was kind of at its peak sometime between the 80s, 90s and 2000s. Coincides also with the peak of the ecological movement more broadly. There were probably always more kind of vaguely anti-civ people than there were specifically anarcho-primitivists, but there's almost certainly not as many around now. It's something that arose as part of the wave of new ideas that were coming out of the 1960s protests, as was green politics more broadly. It's a kind of more, we've had sort of anarchist critique of technology for quite a long time, people like Jack Ellul, Lewis Mumford, Ivan Illich, and it kind of takes that and sort of either deepens it or rigidifies it, depending how you feel about it. And it's very much tied into the impact of the Manmohunter Conference and the anthropology that was prevalent in the late 60s, early 70s. I think it really spoke to the issues of that era. I get the impression quite a lot of the people who were getting into it were people who were into dropout lifestyles and very alienated by the world as it was then, and alienated also by the socialist currents, which up till then had been predominant in radical movements. Although I also get the impression it was stronger in the English-speaking world than it was on the continent, although I might be wrong about that. But I think they still had a lot more sort of autonomous Marxism and stuff like that on the continent. Why it's gone into decline? I think there have been changes in, technology has been renaturalized for the coming generation. I think the generations from the 80s to the 2000s were dealing with the rise of new technologies and either endorsing them or rejecting them. Whereas now we're dealing with a set of people who are basically internet natives who use smartphones a lot and all their political organizing is done through the internet, and they're really not alert to that issue of critique of technology. And you then have to sort of cross-read it also with sort of changes in ecological thought. I think the whole discourse around the Anthropocene and the whole idea that it's too late to avert ecological collapse has actually done quite a bit of damage to the environmental movement, because you haven't got the sense you can achieve anything. We've also had this tendency, the third way from the 90s onwards, we're trying very hard to recuperate ecological discourse. And that sort of takes some of the shine off it for people who are feeling very anti-system. And then on top of that, we've had kind of rise of identity politics and sort of increasing emphasis on sort of culture and semiotics and so on, as opposed to, I think there is this strange continuity that anarcho-primitivism, like most of the movements coming out of the 60s revolt, is still working with an emphasis that to some extent it's getting from Marxism, primary emphasis on sort of production, reproduction, organization of life, on what would be thought of in Marxism as material factors. And even though the conclusions it reaches are completely different and obviously doesn't have the progressivism, but there's really been a move away from that now. Most people are growing up in a world where they think of culture and sort of morality, although they don't quite call it that, and language are sort of the main sites of politics. And anthropology having shifted as well in the universities, it became from the 80s onwards, just the time primitivism was drawing on the earlier anthropology. Anthropology became very interpretive, reflexive, hostile to kind of big general claims about types of societies and drawing political implications about better and worse types of societies, anything like that, and later got very into identity politics as well. And yeah, with a lot of people kind of burning out, and I think the way the world works at the moment, people kind of live in an eternal present, have trouble thinking about the past or the future. And people have lost the sense that they can change the world. And I think all of that feeds into the appeal of belief systems, which are based on sort of radically changing the world, and particularly based on looking at the past or looking at elsewhere and trying to radically change the world based on that.
I think that one of the biggest limitations of primitivism has been that too few writers and thinkers have engaged with it as a serious set of ideas. And so it's had to rely too much on too few writers who, of course, are only capable of doing as much as they can do. And it really needed more if it were going to catch fire in the way that I think the authors would like it to.
Yeah. And I mean, that is connected to the fact that it's not developed that much appeal in academia, because obviously academics write a lot. I think there's issues that come. I mean, there's quite a lot has been written in the sense that the primitivists had their own magazines and newspapers that went on for quite a long time, Green Anarchist, Green Anarchy, and they were getting lots of stuff in the Earth First publications, lots of stuff in a few other smaller scenes. A lot of it is anonymous, so it's hard to tell how many people are actually writing that stuff. But yeah, it's coming up against sort of quite strong prejudices towards aspects of the existing society that maybe a lot of radicals and progressives have got investments in, and particularly the kind of people who are more sort of not so much dropouts, more on the margin between being included and excluded in the system. It probably doesn't appeal that much to those people, and that's probably why there's not that much writing going on. I think once you start getting into sort of people who are talking about it seriously as a body of thought, you start getting into all these problems with, does it fit the ethnographic record or not? And that seems to be what a lot of the discussion goes on. And the difficulty is what the ethnographic record says varies a lot depending on the particular study and also the dominant theoretical trend in anthropology at the time. So we're relying on the anthropologists to give us reliable accounts. And it basically comes down to, do you believe the people from the 60s and 70s, or do you believe the sort of post-structuralist identity politics types? And if you believe the people who are writing today, you're probably not going to believe primitivism fits the ethnographic record either.
Sure.
Because their bias is against that. So that's also possibly why there's not that much written sort of seriously about it.
So as you may or may not know, we publish a magazine called Black Seed that in fact critiques primitivism from a different direction, more or less from the direction of saying that anthropology is sort of mired in its own logic, and that the idea that a radical discourse would sort of rely so heavily on it to make its claims has a variety of pretty deep weaknesses, not the least of which is the one that you just mentioned. And so this article that was quoted in the very beginning more or less says that anthropology is as valid as a science fiction short story. And that's not nothing, but it's not what they claim it is.
Yeah, I think both, I mean, yeah, it's both a strength and a weakness of primitivism that it takes that same kind of position that, again, you would find in Marxism, you would find in anarcho-communism, you would find in a lot of the 19th century anarchisms, that it makes very strong factual claims about the way the world is, and the way the world is in a general way, what the post-structuralists would call meta-narratives. But it's then also making a series of factual claims about the impact of civilized life, the impact of technology, the impact of language representation, art, all these kinds of things. There is a difficulty there in terms of how can one talk a primitivist language? How can one endorse these positions while speaking from within a language that, according to primitivism, is inherently tainted with civilized ways of thinking? And that kind of issue, I think, the post-structuralists actually go further in confronting head-on. And quite often they then end up down the rabbit hole of, you know, language talking to language, and you can't have any meta narratives and all this kind of thing. But they have really recognized that this is a significant issue, that if you're trying to talk about something that is outside the range of what modern language can talk about, you're then coming into a problem with the kind of descriptive literal capture of your own theory. And again, that may be one of the reasons why it's not taken off. It's kind of carrying with it that kind of almost Marxist style talking about politics, even though it rejects a lot of the science that's based on.
Do you think that anarcho-primitivism will live beyond its founder, John Zerzan?
It may revive and feed into wider currents. I think what may well happen over time is that it gets reconsidered either as a subtype of post-left or egoist anarchism, or as a subtype of radical ecology. And both of those kind of broader sort of clusters of belief systems are both alive and well and have contemporary incarnations. And I can see it being something that people come back to and sort of reevaluate later.
I get the impression that Desert was not nearly as popular in the UK as it was in the US.
Yeah, very hard to tell the reception, because it's never quite clear who's reading these things and who's responding. But in the UK, the general trend has been that there was a big upsurge in ecological politics in the 1980s, 1990s. In the 1990s, there was a very successful anti-roads movement that staged eco-protest camps, kind of sit-ins and blockades along the line of road building and other big building projects. They managed to, a lot of the things that they had the confrontations about, they didn't manage to stop, but it imposed kind of projected costs on businesses that were involved in this stuff that meant that businesses started pulling out of those projects. And that then evolved into Reclaim Streets. Or at least that was one of the things that came from it. And they were sort of a major component of the anti-capitalist movement around about 1990-1901 in Britain. I mean, after that, ecological politics is kind of, two things. One is the radical movement in general went into decline, was very heavily hit by repression during the Blair years in the 2000s. Another is that the centre of gravity of radical politics seems to have moved away from ecology, seems to have moved partly towards traditional left politics, partly towards identity politics. But also there is ecology has tended to become sort of, it's perceived now as a middle-class movement and as very much sort of reformist and pacifist. And obviously Extinction Rebellion is held up as an example of that, but it was already perceived in those terms sort of at the time of Climate Camp in the late 2000s. When it still had more of an anarchist vibe about it. Desert, I think, was written at a time when that movement was already in decline by people who were perceived to be associated with that previous stage. So it got a negative reaction from kind of the next generation coming up who were into different kinds of politics.
Oh, really?
I don't think that, that's my impression of what was going on.
Yeah, it was very popular here on the West Coast.
Yeah.
What do you think of, or to what extent has there been a popularity associated with Dark Mountain?
Controversial people either love it or hate it. We've seen again, I mean, as I say, there's a lot of identity politics stuff going on, and there's been a big attack on the people running Dark Mountain, on the grounds that one of them wrote something that was vaguely sympathetic to nationalism, saying that we needed a left nationalism or something like that, after which there was a whole hate campaign calling them eco-fascists. But I think among the people who are into radical ecology already, it's gone down fairly well. I get the impression Dark Mountain's actually quite a pessimistic project.
Yes, for sure.
And again, it seems to be sort of centered around people who were at their political peak in the anti-capitalist wave 1999 to 2001.
Yes, same era as Do or Die.
Yeah. It's had some impact, and certainly I say people who are into ecology, like people who are already attracted to that kind of politics are into it. But other people very much trying to marginalize it, very much not wanting anything sort of impinging on the kind of politics they're already doing.
Yeah, it does seem like Paul Kinsnorth is basically a celebrity intellectual, and which we don't have almost any at all here in the US.
We don't have that many in the UK, and their influence is very limited. But yeah, he has articles in mainstream newspapers like The Guardian, and that's why he then gets sort of things he said taken out of context and turned into Twitter storms. I think having those kinds of leading people whose names are known and who you can go back and look at their past statements and put whatever spin on them you want, that's a vulnerability in the current context.
Right.
And that is something that's being hit. But yeah, there's a whole fashion as well here. Accelerationism has really taken off.
Get out of here.
Yeah, I think it's one of the hotbeds is in Britain. It's not that huge as a social movement, but there's a lot of them on social media. They're very active in producing memes and making themselves relevant, as they would call it, and they've sort of infiltrated the movement around Corbyn, who's a left-winger who's become leader of the Labour Party, the main left-wing party here. And there's a lot of radicals reoriented to him when he got in. It was kind of unexpected. He won against the odds in a party that had been taken over by the neoliberals for a long time. And there's a lot of the accelerationists got involved in that. And there's a lot of, you know, the manifesto they ran at the last election was heavily inflated with accelerationism. So that's very much got a vibe at the moment. Accelerationism is viciously hostile to anything along the lines of sort of primitivism, deep ecology, anti-civ. And they've been sort of using identity politics style tactics, throwing around this, that, and the other is fascist, this has racist implications, this is transphobic, etc. There's a lot of that going on, and there's now this sort of almost flame war going on between the accelerationists and the, they would generally call themselves degrowth nowadays, the ecology types.
Right.
So yeah, that's kind of, as far as I know it, the situation here. I get the impression some of this stuff is maybe going down better on the continent because they're at a different stage in the emergence of social movements. I think they were hit later by the full-on sort of neoliberalism. So they're seeing some of these kinds of ideas really kicking off now.
Yeah, and also they're not suffering Brexit.
Yeah, and also identity politics has never been as strong in most. There's a few countries where it is, but mostly it isn't. So we are seeing sort of back-to-the-land stuff going on in Greece and Spain. We see a lot of influence of the Tikkun Invisible Committee group, who've got sort of some ecological underpinnings. So we're seeing that stuff maybe having more impact on the continent than it is. And it's something else big that's happening at the moment. Latin America, we have this whole thing. It's called Buen Vivir, or Good Living. And it covers a range of positions from sort of very radical to kind of reformist politicians pushing it. It's sort of become a bit of an empty signifier. But the ideas under it are sort of similar to sort of deep ecology, soft primitivism, anti-civ type stuff, but without necessarily the conceptual clarity that it's been given by somebody like Zerzan, or even Illich. You know, it's sort of, but yeah, that it's sort of taking off there as a major counterpoint, particularly since we've had socialist governments in a few of those countries that have gone wrong or sold out or haven't realized what the indigenous people or the rural populations thought they might. We're seeing this emerging as a kind of alternative pole. Whether that could eventually adopt, you know, whether primitivist ideas would find their way into that or anti-civ ideas, I don't know. There doesn't seem to be much of a conversation at the moment. The Buen Vivir stuff generally hasn't even been translated into English, but it could happen. You know, there's obvious space there for a conversation.
Thank you very much for your time, Andy.
Well, thank you for having me on.
I'm a warrior, earth warrior, true mom pagan, yeah. I'm a warrior, nature's soldier, fighting for the earth. I'm a warrior, earth warrior.
This podcast is the effort of many people. This week, the podcast was sound edited by Grieg. What's New was written by Jackie and Greg, and read by Chisel and Grieg. No editorial this week. We thank Aragorn and a friend for their help with the topic of the week, anarcho-primitivism. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, anarchist and anti-political books, pamphlets, and other material are available at littleblackcart.com. For news by and or about anarchists, and up-to-the-minute commentary, see you at anarchistnews.org. and or the Anarchist News IRC chat room linked on ANews and or anarchy101.org.